You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.
So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Political Fix. It's Wednesday, November 5th, 2014, just after the elections in the United States. And, you know, I guess that's what we're going to be talking about on the show here today, since it is The Political Fix, but I'm not sure how much they do fixing it, talking with Heather the other day. But I want to introduce the host of the show, Jay Amernick, strategic planner, helping his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. He also serves as a bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S. and his development labs create smartphone apps and inventions. I didn't know that about you, Jay. I have to talk to you more about that. And is Rick with us today?
Yep.
I am.
Rick is here. Good. Rick is a serial entrepreneur, internet marketer, says you have a degree in philosophy. Political development is called The Solution, which is to cap and prioritize government spending. My name is Harry Shade. I'm sitting in for the effervescent Heather Vail, who is off in New York City. And obviously, since I'm on air, there's no sexy today. How you doing, guys?
I am bringing the sexy today. I'm doing fantastic, Harry.
And I'm leaving all the sexy up to Jay.
Then we're in a great deal of trouble.
Yes, we are. Most definitely.
Yeah, so yeah, it was the elections and some interesting things, but I'm guessing. Well, you take it away, Harry. You're in charge here.
Well, from what I understand, that's going to make it even more dangerous than if I'm in charge. Well, you know, I was looking up for the story of the day, and we could go one of two ways here. Obviously, you know, the Republicans have wrested control of the entire Congress, or we could talk about where America landed on marijuana. You know. Both of those very, very hot topics. But I suppose for you guys today, it's probably going to be a good idea to talk about, it says, first state for Democrats, a bad start to 2016. Republicans, for the first time in a while, have gained control of all of Congress. And, you know, but it's kind of funny. It's what I like about the article, it says, using the 2000 midterms as a barometer, the 2016 presidential campaign makes about as much sense as predicting the winner of the 2014 series based on 2012's results, the World Series. But that's what's going on. And, you know, obviously the Democrats are going to make a case that the election is different. It was an election about nothing. The states holding elections were not a representative sample. Okay, Republicans are now in full control of Congress. And they're going to have the burden of governing. So that's what the story is all about. Republicans have it now. And, you know, leading into 2016, how is this going to affect things? So guys, talk about it. How is this going to affect what happens in 2016, do you think?
Okay, well, let me just start, because I know one of the things Rick's going to say, yes, as it pertains to cap and prioritize, it doesn't really change much of anything, because that is not an issue that is on the political landscape as of yet. But I need to apologize to everybody, because I always talked about the silly season in politics, which is the you know, negative ads and the robocalls and all that. And I said it will soon be over. I am sorry. I apologize. I was on Facebook this morning. It is not over. I must apologize. To my friends on the left who think that the sky has fallen in and that they're terrified that our country's not going to survive, if they could step back and listen to themselves for 10 seconds, they would realize how incredibly ridiculous that is. And I will make the case that this was not actually an election about nothing. It wasn't a super substantive event or election, excuse me. But let me say this. The Democrats ran on, this is a war on women, you know, the Republicans are racist, all this other nonsense, okay? That did not work out so well for them. The number one issue on people's minds is the economy. That's what the Gallup poll said. That's what almost every exit poll has said. That's what this was about. And and this is actually going to force the president to do one of two things, is one, to veto everything that comes across his desk, which I would suggest to him is not a great move, or two, work with Congress and come up with a moderate solution to any piece of legislation that they may put forth. I think that is probably the best thing to go to. The second thing, another byproduct of the election, actually, is for some reason the Republicans took my advice and waylaid the religious right, and that those were not issues that were part of this election. It wasn't about the classic gods, guns, and gays. It was about the economy. Simple as that. They won elections by marginalizing the extremists in their own party. From a tactical point of view, I look at it and I say, they ran a better organization this time around, which is somewhat unusual for them.
All right. Well, that Jay's side of the things there. Rick, what do you got to say? How's this going to help out with your solution of capping and prioritizing, having the Republicans have control of everything?
Well, the Republicans, of course, are all about caps, all about limits on government for various reasons. Some want caps because they want freedom, because that's more the libertarian right. Some want limits on government for fiscal sustainability and just fiscal maturity. And that's kind of maybe the moderate right. Then there's the conservatives who might want caps just because it's the right thing to do. It's what our founders wanted. It was a very limited government and so on. So there's different reasons why the political right comes to the feeling that they want to limit government, but they unite on that one thing, if nothing else. Now, the and prioritize part of cap and prioritize is something that people aren't really thinking about. And so that's not really being discussed right now in politics. The person who's coming closest to it is Paul Ryan from Wisconsin. He talks about, let's give all the social money to the states and let's let the states have competitions within them for which, government programs, which government bodies, which even private sector companies can spend that money most wisely in terms of results, in terms of helping people. So that kind of competition is the right direction. What Paul Ryan's missing is that you actually have to prioritize the budget in order to make those decisions about which is producing better results. But the in terms of how it helps or hurts cap and prioritize, it's just one more step on the trend line of history. And so for a little while now, a couple of years, we're going to see the political right trying to, lead, at least in Congress, trying to put together idea after idea. And at some point, they're going to run into a lot of resistance, to the idea of limiting government. And so if the political right at this point plays it safe and they do small little things that are popular, then they will set themselves up for a good re-election or a good presidential election for them in 2016. If they try to go for it, if the Ted Cruz's of the world end up pushing the political right to be more aggressive, I don't think that'll happen. I think he'll try, but I don't think he'll succeed. But if he does succeed, if the right goes too far, they're going to run into that resistance, and they're going to learn the hard way that you can't sell the caps to the American public unless you also have the and prioritize message attached to it. So, but since no one's talking about that, they're not going to know why they fail. They're going to just be more and more frustrated. And so, what I see this election as is really it's a win for Karl Rove. It's a win for the money that he spent making sure that good people won the primaries, so that the Republicans then shoot themselves in the foot in the general election. But in the longer trend, this is just going to frustrate the left more, And then as soon as the right tries to do something big, they're going to get frustrated again, and so this is just one more step in the frustration cycle.
Okay, well, we could go several different ways on this thing, but one of the things that came up in the article as well, and I was listening to some political shows this morning to kind of at least slightly prepare for what I'm doing here. a lot of talk about how this really hurts Hillary Clinton in 2016 because she made like 45 campaign stops for Democrats and didn't seem to have much to an effect. Jay, do you really think this is going to have a major impact on Hillary?
Wait a minute. This is huge news. Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nomination for 2016. So they're not going to have a convention or anything?
Well, you know, that's
this
what, you know.
That is such nonsense. And if I would, again, I'm nonpartisan. If I were a Democrat, I would be furious that they've decided already who my candidate is. I think that is insane. They tried that once before, by the way, with Hillary Clinton, and a young man by the name of Barack Obama came along. So
well, guess who made that comment? It was a Republican. Senator Rand Paul is the one from Kentucky.
Then he is presuming that is the candidate. Okay, I don't know what to say. I don't consider anybody a candidate until they're a candidate.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
Or in the state's candidate. I'm sure she will run.
Well, you know, that's just something that they seem to have to do. I mean, they were talking about Hillary Clinton running for president back in, you know, when Obama was the nominee and doing things, and they were already looking forward.
Yeah, I don't know why. Personally, I don't know why Rand Paul is wasting his time worrying about this. He should be worrying about governing, or legislating. Unless he's part of the Central Committee, worry about the tactical aspects of a presidential campaign when the time comes.
Okay. All right. Rick,
that's my advice to him.
All right.
Well, in terms of Hillary Clinton, it's unfair to judge her in her role as someone who helps Democratic candidates, you know, in this off-season election cycle. Because all she can do is fly around, give a speech, and then fly away. I mean, what effect does that really have? In the end, people are still voting for the local issues, the local politicians, and the national zeitgeist. You know, I mean, that's what it comes down to. So, I don't think this helps or hurts Hillary at all. You're saying that she's failed to inspire people to vote for someone else. I mean, that's just silly. So this was a Republican year, and it was a Republican year precisely because of Obama. Because Obama just simply refuses to lead. He wants to lead from behind, as he says. That's his line. So, basically what he's doing is he's waiting for things to become crises before he even really responds. And then when it's a crisis, he says, oh, well, it's a crisis. What can we do? You know? And then he just hopes people will kind of, you know, forget or go on to the next thing or whatever. But the people can tolerate that a little bit because it's politics. But for Obama to do all that and have nothing else that he's actually for, nothing that he's trying to do, nothing he's trying to make happen, and to have no leadership at all on some of these really, really important things like Ebola especially, which is like trivial to be ahead of if he chose to, that's where that kind of stuff really excites the political right and really demoralizes the political left. And the political left doesn't show up in the midterms elections as much anyway. They fall off more than the political right does. So you put all that together, and it's a Republican year, but not because of why the Republicans want it to be. You know, it's not because the Republicans have a better vision of government. They're just not as stupid this year as the Democrats have been. So, again, this speaks towards the Republicans misreading, perhaps, this election cycle. It's not about Republican ascendancy. It's that Republicans haven't been as stupid as the Democrats recently. We'll have to see how the Republicans govern. I agree with what Charles Krauthammer said yesterday on Fox News when he said that what the Republicans should do now is stick with popular proposals and small ones, so that this we don't get dragged into the big party fight, and they should just do one new thing a week and force Obama to either step up to the Republican ideas or veto a popular idea. And by doing so, take charge of the agenda. If the Republicans do that, then again, they're going to set themselves up great for 2016. The hint that this might actually happen is that, number one, McConnell is a very shrewd politician, very, very, very shrewd. I've seen some of the inside deals that he's put together through one of my other contacts in the Senate, and he knows how to play the game, so he's smart. Boehner in the Congress isn't quite as sophisticated, but now he doesn't have to kowtow to the Tea Party right as much. He has such a majority in the House that he can afford to go with proposals that are less aggressive, more popular, and get some momentum behind the Republican brand. And he might have to suffer through a little bit of screaming on the Tea Party right, but the Tea Party right is no longer essential to Boehner's voting bloc. So that gives him a little bit more wiggle room, and I believe that he'll be essentially following McConnell's lead, at least in terms of the backroom strategy. And I predict that the Republicans are going to be a lot smarter this time around than they were, for example, in the Newt Gingrich days, where they overplayed their hands with the shutdown, and especially since they had some recent, skinning of the knees with various shutdown attempts.
Yeah.
I think they're going to play it safe this time around.
All right, sounds good. Well, speaking of taking charge of the agenda, I guess that's my position here at this point. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we'll come back to Inside Perspective with Jay Amrinek. You're listening to The Political Fix. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to The Political Fix. We're going to actually go into a part of the show now called The Inside Perspective with Jay Amrinek. So, Jay, take it away.
Thank you, Harry. Okay, so this week, and I'll tie it into Cap and Prioritize, Rick, don't worry, as one of the stumbling blocks as well. So there is, again, we talk a lot about the court of public opinion. And in general, because of the way government works, Congress works, it's boring, it's murky. Seriously, sit down and watch C-SPAN sometime. It is, it gives paint drying a run for its money. So I see a lot of things, and people are real snarky about politicians and everything like that. And yes, there is, some shenanigans and things like that. But overall, they say, oh, well, why don't we pay Congress minimum wage, see how quickly it changes. First of all, let me say this. The application process to become a member of Congress, be it senator or be it House of Representatives, is so rigorous and so hideous that any of these people who are shouting about that would not make it through the process. It is taxing physically. It is taxing emotionally. It is hurtful. It is hateful. And not only that, you have to go through it, if you're a member of Congress, in another 2 years. So it's literally your campaign almost never stops. You imagine if your job, we're not talking about a review every 2 years. We're talking about you have to reapply for your job every 2 years. Okay? It is incredibly, incredibly difficult, and they are, some would say overcompensated. I'm not going to make that judgment, but to say that they should get minimum wage is ridiculous. And shows how little people kind of know about how government works. And here's how it comes into Cap and Prioritize. Again, when government is more efficient, people will have a more realistic view of government. When government works better, and they will work better under Cap and Prioritize, obviously, we've been through that 1,000 times on the show. It gets us out of the nonsense, out of the muck, out of the silly season, and into reality, and we can really talk about the prioritize piece of it and what makes sense to prioritize and what makes no sense to prioritize. Now, Rick, you may disagree with me.
well, let's see. But I guess I missed your point. Can you encapsulate it in like one sentence?
Yes.
I think I agree with you, but I'm just not sure.
Yeah, no. My people tend to take a very cynical view of Congress or politics in general. Sometimes with good reason, because it's the way it's reported on the news. But once Cap and Prioritize is implemented, you will actually see efficient government working, and you will see politicians getting less and less into the silly stuff and more into reality, and there'll be less talk about, if you want something to change, pay Congress minimum wage or some other nonsense like that.
Okay, so your point, I guess, is that, hey, frustrated voter on the left or right.
Yes.
I understand your frustration, but here's good news. There's light at the end of the tunnel. It's called Cap and Prioritize, and it's going to restructure the political fight so that whoever gets elected, they're going to have to fight in this new prioritized budgeting process where it's more transparent, the good stuff wins, results matter, and we can stop arguing about left versus right, and we can start arguing about who is the better administrator, and things will calm down.
Yes, and there'll be no more, right, and there'll be no more, hey, Congress, we're going to put this into the bill where we're going to fund a pickle festival in Stockton, California. None of that. It's, I don't know that Stockton has a pickle festival. I just made that up, but there'll be no more of that pork barrel spending. There'll be no more of that nonsense.
Yeah. The thing that's hard to believe about that is that government is so screwed up, and it's been so screwed up in this way for all of our adult lives. Okay, I mean, like if there isn't another Hitler invading Europe, the country would unite behind rebuilding up the army and going to fight the good war. Okay, so something like that happens and we unite. But absent of those extreme circumstances, we as a nation have been divided now, and hysterically so for as long as anyone alive can remember. And it's gotten worse in a lot of ways, and more petty in a lot of ways.
Well,
how can someone believe that a simple idea like Cap and Prioritize could possibly have that big of an effect?
Well, okay. First of all, let me say this. It starts with, I think, with words. And actually, I saw some of the speeches from the winners last night, and almost all of them were very thoughtful and. I called, my opponent, and then, of course, there are boos from the audience, and then now elected official says, no, hold on a second. Yep. This individual loves Texas as much as I do, loves this country as much as I do. We just differ on some politics, and I congratulated them on running a great campaign and appreciate their service and everything like that. And I think that it's funny when the politicians are the ones that are being civil. On the other hand, it was their ads that got everybody so riled up in the first place and turned that opponent into the devil. And now it's like, ho, friends, Romans, countrymen. I think it's kind of funny, but I think that, again, it starts with that. And if we can take away from that, because I was like, I'm the last guy to bring the woo-woo, but I was like, this is good, it wasn't gloating. These were thoughtful speeches, thoughtful remarks.
Yeah, in general, unless you live in a very, skewed district, okay, as a congressman, in general, you can't get elected without being pretty darn smart. Okay, it's only the people from the it's only the San Francisco districts that can elect Nancy Pelosi, or who's the equivalent on the right? We've lost a couple of our, there used to be some people on the right who they'd say things and I'm like, oh my goodness, Jesse Helms comes to mind.
The people that end up on Jon Stewart, those are the ones you're talking about.
I'll tell you something. I'm actually very careful to, when you take sound bites from a politician, be it on the right, left or on the right, it's very easy to sort of take the worst of what they've said, decontextualize it or not decontextualize it, and it just happens to be a terrible, terrible quote, and put it out there. It's like listening to the Police's album Synchronicity and the song Mother and saying, oh my God, this is the worst album I've ever heard. I'm like, no, that song just really sucks. The rest of the album is fantastic. Sorry, Andy Summers, I know you wrote that, but whatever. You see what I'm saying? You can take the worst of anything and put it out there as the pinnacle and say, okay, it's all trash. That's what they do. Now, Nancy Pelosi is a special case because at this point, I think she at one point was very smart. At this point, I think she's I can't make a judgment on her mental health, but I think there are times I listen to her and I'm like, she's really lost it.
She's clearly smart in a strategic kind of sense. I mean, you can't get where she is without being smart in that way. But when she says things like she said when Obamacare was being passed, or it was in question, she gets up there and to the press, she says, "Well, we have to pass it in order to find out what's in it."
I believe on this very show, I called that the most irresponsible thing I've heard any politician say ever.
I just can't believe that.
Well, right, but the press was complicit. They bought it hook, line, and sink.
Yeah. However, she gets away with those kinds of lines because, she represents an ideology, the political left ideology. And the political left is going to fight and protect fight for and protect their leaders and as long as they can. Okay. Now, what's interesting is that the political right is actually quicker to give up on its leaders. I think it's because the political right tends to do a lot more moralizing, and whoever is doing the moralizing is always at risk of being a hypocrite. And so as soon as someone's a hypocrite, your own party gives up on you. Okay? So the hypocrite argument works against the political right, and it doesn't work against the political left.
Yeah.
And that's just the nature of the division. But there used to be a lot more voices in Congress that on the political right that would just say these amazing things, and I couldn't believe that they were in power and in leadership positions and so on. But I'm seeing less of that now. There's still Ted Cruz will throw bombs. He's a pure libertarian kind of guy. He's like, he'll just quote the common quotes that you hear in about liberty and that's the end of the story for him.
Right.
But he's still smarter than the average Joe. He doesn't say too many stupid things. He just talks about how good capitalism, how good liberty is, how good freedom is, and so he tends to play it safe within his more pure libertarian views. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, but there have been very few, as you suggest, just sort of, what the devil did he just say moments. As of late, which is a good thing. It means that the Democrats need to get on board with this now. But to all my friends on the left on Facebook today, okay, so there's a new member of Congress. What's her name? Joni Ernst from Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the first woman senator from Iowa. Okay, so she opposes abortion. Okay, what does she plan on doing about it? Probably nothing. And if she does, her legislation will be so kooky. One, it'll have no co-sponsor on the left, and two, it'll be so kooky that Mitch McConnell probably won't even let it come to the floor of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So who cares? So let her be anti-abortion, or let her want to do away with the Department of Education or any of her other sort of exotic views. Let her have those views. She's not going to do anything about it, and that's really the key. But people get so up in arms about things like that, and they literally think. I literally read today some friends of mine on Facebook. The country is going to end. Kidding
we hear
me?
That, we hear that every two years,
first.
Don't we?
That's how outrageous that was.
Yeah. All right. Well, gentlemen, we're at that time to take the second break of the day. So we're going to go ahead and do that. You are listening to The Political Fix. When we come back, we'll be taking some callers. That number is 888-627-6008. One more time, 888-627-6008. You are listening to The Political Fix. We'll be back after this break. So So we have no guests. So you guys just want to go back into what you were discussing, or
on n'a pas vu de méchants dans les fonds de tiroirs. On n'a pas vu dans les champs ce que l'on devait voir. On n'a même pas vu les dieux s'arrêter un peu. Dans le fond des yeux, des baleines bleues. On n'a pas vu le soleil dans le fond des ruisseaux. On n'a pas vu de merveilles dans nos paquets cadeaux. On n'a même pas vu les cieux s'arrêter un peu. Dans le fond des yeux, des baleines bleues. Mais on a vu du ciment sur le bord des fossés. On a même vu des enfants se remettre à pleurer. Et tous ces jours où il pleut, on replonge un peu. Dans le fond des yeux, les baleines bleues. Dans le fond des yeux, les baleines bleues. Pip tout va tout faudal, folie va folie faille.
All right, welcome back to the Political Fix. This is Rick Raddatz, and as you've noticed, we have Heather gone, and in her place is Harry. And so I thought we'd take this time, this segment here, to get to know Harry's politics a little bit, and then we'll educate him on our cap and prioritize solution. And see what he thinks about it, and see what questions he has. And so Harry, tell us a little bit about where you come from on the political spectrum.
I'll certainly do that. And before I jump into there, Jay, I want you to know, I don't know if Stockton has a pickle festival, but Obetz, Ohio has a zucchini fest.
Yes, but is it subsidized by the federal government?
And I can tell you it is not.
Okay, very good.
So, there you go. Anyway, well, I mean, I basically fall in the middle of things. I don't vote party lines or party ticket. In fact, I went out yesterday. I voted for some Democrats, some Republicans. I voted for some independents as well. My tendency is to go for who I feel is the most qualified and is going to do, you know, the job that I'd like to see them do when they get in there. Now, I have a lot of people, Rick, have told me over the years, well, if you vote for, you know, an independent or one of the other parties, it's just a waste of a vote. I don't see it that way. I think it's, you know, talking to a lot of people from some of these other parties, the Green Party and whatnot, libertarians, a lot of them tell me that if nothing else, yes, they don't get elected, but a lot of times what they're really trying to do is get their ideas out there and see if one of the two major political parties might pick up on something. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my point of view. I'm looking for the best person who can come in there and, you know, do the job and represent their district, their area as best they possibly can. Now, you know, it's funny because I mentioned a little bit earlier about John Stewart, and we talked about, you know, Nancy Pelosi. You guys were talking about that and things. You know, it's the congressmen and it's the senators that say the silly things that get on John Stewart that make the whole batch of people bad. And I'm going to tell you, it's like anything else. And Jay, about to bring the woo-woo. You ready, buddy?
As ready as I'm ever going to be.
Okay. Listen, it's like anything else. 90% of the people out there are good people, okay, trying to do the best job they possibly can do. I believe that about anything that goes on out there, whether it's Congress or anything else. I really believe that 90% are trying to do the best they possibly can given the situation. I just think it's a huge mess. And I think it's going to take a lot to fix it. And I know you guys talk about, you know, cap and prioritize as that potential fix. So I was kind of segueing into that. Tell me a little bit more about cap and prioritize, and I'll then give you my opinion on it.
Okay, so here's the deal with cap and prioritize. First, our theory is that it's not even the 10% that are screwing up the problem or screwing up the government. Because I'll agree with you that maybe 99% of Congress are really there trying to do the right thing, that, you know, based on their beliefs. And so what we believe, those of us who believe in cap and prioritize, is that the system itself has some perverse incentives or some corrupting incentives. The system itself, like, just, you know, our founding fathers, what did they do? They gave politicians a blank check and said, go win elections. Okay. Now, back in the day, people were more disciplined than they are now. You had to be, because you went to prison if you owed money that you couldn't pay back. Okay, debtor's prison, they called it. Yeah. And that lasted up until the 1830s in South Carolina. So it's not actually, you know, that far. It's like two lifetimes away from our living today. So that was a very disciplined time. And so in that very disciplined time, you had only the most educated people, the property owners, who were, I guess, most disciplined, most educated, voting. So when you have only that population voting, you're going to have a government naturally that kind of stays within some sense of limits. But nowadays, everyone votes. Everyone votes. And so the structure of our government, it wasn't designed for this scenario. Because when everyone votes, then, and politicians, again, are given a blank check and said, go win elections. It doesn't take a PhD to figure out that you're going to have two parties. One that uses that power of that blank check to buy votes. And in doing so, they say, hey, the masses, you know, you need help. We want to help you. And the rich people, they should fund that. They should help you because look how they're benefiting from the situation. And so that's the Democratic Party, okay? And very clearly, you're going to have a party in opposition to that that says, no, that's not the right way to do it. And that party is going to be split in two. The purists who say that we shouldn't do it at all, and it's the wrong thing to do. And then the pragmatists who say, well, you got to do it a little bit or you're just not even going to get elected. Okay, so that's what we have. We have the Democratic Party, which is a coalition of groups that want to help people. That's their top line mission. And then you have the Republican Party split in these two halves, the purists and the pragmatists. So the reason cap and prioritize, we believe, is going to solve this problem is that let's take social spending, for example, because it's the biggest chunk of spending. It's the fastest growing spending. It's the most in need of reform, and it's also the hardest to reform. Okay, so that's a really good, tough challenge for us. If we could cap the growth of that spending to make Republicans really happy, the purists and the pragmatists, if we allowed it to grow every year but slower than our economy. Okay, a good example of this would be it's called a population plus inflation cap. Okay, this is where you let social spending grow every year as fast as population grows, plus however fast inflation is, okay? That would keep the per-person purchasing power of social spending the same over time, meaning government would always be able to help people as well as it helps them right now. Republicans and conservatives, libertarians, they love this kind of cap because the economy grows a little bit faster on average, and so taxes can go down. And yet we're still helping people as much as we're helping them right now. So the Republicans have tried to pitch this cap. They tried it in Colorado. They kind of got it. They used to have it in California. It went away. They tried in Florida, but it failed. So Republicans are trying, but they can't get this cap to stick. Why not? Because the political left, the voters, and the activists, they don't want to help people only as much as we're helping them right now. They want to help them better and better and better. Of course they do. Okay? So that's where the prioritizing comes in. If we can keep the purchasing power of government money the same over time, but then we can divide it among the states and have 50 different experiments for how to prioritize it, how to rank it from top to bottom. So the most important stuff is on top and the waste, fraud, and abuse is on the bottom. Okay? If we can have 50 different experiments for how to prioritize, then every year we will throw away the stupid spending and replace it with a little bit better spending because of the competition. And over time, over the decades, this competition will find better and better ways to use that constant purchasing power. You know, think about that. We're going to find better and better ways to use that constant purchasing power. What that means is that cap and prioritize is like a machine that constantly improves government spending. It makes it better and better at helping people, better and better at what the left calls social justice or fairness or equal opportunity. Take your pick. Mm-hmm. So what cap and prioritize is doing is it's constantly shrinking taxes as it's constantly making government better at helping people. So that's where I say this unites the values and goals of the right and left. And if you're a politician, this is a limit on what you can do. You're limited by the budget size, first of all, because of the cap. and you're limited in what proposals you can make because you've got to push something down to put something new in. Okay, so we're actually limiting what politicians can do. We're forcing them to be better than they would be otherwise. Okay, and by, you know, and then given their incentives, they're going to pretend to be better than they really are, but by pretending they will be. So this is a way of constantly improving our government in every respect as we're still shrinking it in terms of our tax requirements. So what do you think? What are your questions?
Well, basically, I don't necessarily have any questions about that. It has a logical, you know, side and bent to it. And, you know, like you, when you first started off talking about, you know, taking away the blank check, I mean, obviously, your most disciplined of people, after a while, you know, with a blank check, could possibly, I guess, go to the dark side, if you want to put it that way. You know, so if that, and yes, and I guess for me, though, how do we determine what is the silly stuff? I mean, there's obvious ones, like if we're, you know, dealing with pickle festivals. But, you know, how do you then go down on the prioritized list and say, you know, this is something that doesn't work if it benefits, you know, a certain amount of people? Is there a percentage you're looking for or what?
Well, you see, that would be a competition among the other ideas that are up for prioritizing. And think about it this way. Over time, the bar constantly raises. Okay, so over time, the bar constantly raises because we're throwing away better and better programs because we have even better programs to fund. Okay, based on the results, based on how good they are at helping people. For example, just giving someone money helps them for a time, but it also encourages dependency.
Right.
Giving them a voucher for education, a voucher for clothing, a voucher for healthcare, a voucher, we can start to see how, okay, we can kind of dial up and dial down the vouchers and change the mix of vouchers based even on the individual. So we can start to get more precise about how we're helping a person. And we can learn through competition when to help them and when to stop helping them and how to ease that transition, because stopping helping someone is part of helping them. Anyone who's ever helped someone through addiction with alcohol or drugs knows about enabling and how dangerous enabling is. And so you have to help them, but you also have to learn when to back off a little bit and then when to reengage. And so that's what this competitive system will discover. And here's the counterintuitive thing, is that, again, over time, we're throwing away better and better programs because what's left is even better. That's the key to constant improvement, is you have to be willing to destroy ideas that you thought were good, that were good before, but now there's better ones. So it's that competition that's going to create constant improvement. It's about spending better, not spending more.
Okay. All right. Well, like I said, I really don't have any questions about it. You explained it very well. I see the logic in it. So with that, that actually takes us to our last break of the day. And you are listening to The Political Fix. We will be back after this short break and be talking about the outside perspective, a.k.a. Rick's rant, when we get back. Welcome back to The Political Fix. We're going to now take you into outside perspective, a.k.a. Rick's rant. So, Rick, take it away, my friend.
All right, thank you. My rant today, Jay actually mentioned this earlier. He didn't know this was going to be my rant. But
did not.
My rant today is about the people, and the left does this and the right does this. Today is about the left. But my rant is about all the people who say it's the end of the so-and-so party, the end of the Republican Party, the end of the Democratic Party. Okay. And we've seen this now, like every 2 years, the other side wins big. Okay. And I saw someone from the UK comment on this. And they were jealous of us. It was a conservative. And when Barack Obama got elected, and then in 2010, was the big wave election for Republicans, the conservative from the UK just couldn't believe it. Because in the UK, when the conservatives go out of power, they're out of power for like a decade.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, and they gotta work themselves back in. And here in the US, like Obama wins big and does the Obamacare thing, and then the conservatives rally back, and big historic sweep. But then 2 years later, Barack Obama wins re-election in spite of all that supposed anger. And then now, 2 years after that, here we are. Republicans win pretty much every close contest that they could have won. Okay, so what's going on here? Well, what's going on here is that we, the people, are schizophrenic. We, the people, are of two minds. We have a split personality, however you want to describe it. Some of us want freedom or things related to freedom, and some of us want fairness or things related to fairness. And we just haven't figured out how to connect these two ideas. But one thing we can be sure of, if the freedom people win this election, the fairness people are going to be more motivated next election, and vice versa. And so the pendulum is going to swing, okay? It's going to swing, and leaders will emerge because there's power to be had. And so it's never the end of the party. And if it is the end of the party, it's because some new party is coming along to take over the mantle. So the Whigs turn into Republicans and whatever else. So, I mean, every 100 years or so, something like that happens. But, you know, that's kind of hard to predict. The main point here is that we, the people, are having the right fight. Okay? We're fighting about freedom and fairness and how to do both. And eventually, based on this cap and prioritize idea, we can predict that now that the idea exists, now that we know mathematically and structurally how to achieve freedom and fairness, it's just a matter of time. And so I'm optimistic for the future, for our country, for humanity. You know, our trend line is up if you look at humanity over thousands of years, the trend line is up. And so we can relax about the end of the party idea. Jay?
Yeah, I'd actually agree. And I'll also say something. There is something a little bit baked into the every two-year election about the pendulum swinging back. As a matter of fact, this time around, actually, the actual mathematics and mechanics of it favored the Republicans because that was who was up for election and so forth and so on. In another 2 years, in 2016, it will actually favor the Democrats. I don't know about on the presidential level, but certainly on the congressional level, it will favor the Democrats. Whether they are able to become the majority again in either house, I don't know. But that is sort of baked in because of who won the election 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of perpetuates itself a little bit. You know, there are obviously exceptions to that.
Hey, I'm going to ask you two gentlemen to look into your crystal ball here real quick, and I'm going to start with Jay. Do you ever see the possibility in our lifetime, maybe, of there becoming a third political party that comes into play?
No. Let me elucidate. Okay. So we have many other parties. If you look at your ballot, for the higher offices, for governor, for senator, there is usually an independent. There are things like that. Are they a major player? Not particularly. And again, also in this country, I think we have to be very careful about something like the Green Party, not because of their ideology, but because they are a political party that is multinational. They are not based in the United States. They're actually based in Europe. And then they have an arm here, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sit well with me as an American. I don't think that anyone in Congress should be taking their talking points from somebody in Geneva. So that's my so I think that the more people learn about that, the more they will not be interested in the Green Party. Now, some of the Green Party's ideas may make their way over into one of the major parties, which is, as Rick suggested before, that sometimes, or actually, sorry, Harry, it was you who suggested it. Forgive me. That's actually their aim, is to get their platform as part of a larger party's national platform.
Mm-hmm. Rick,
which is often
think?
The model of a startup company, is actually to get bought up by a larger company.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Oddly enough, so why not have it work?
In our system of government, we have Congress, which is the House and the Senate, and then we have the presidency, right?
Right.
And then, of course, there's the Supreme Court and all the judges.
Judicial.
The judicial branch. So But in terms of direct elections, because we have this election for president, that really forces us to have a two-party system. Where you see about important third parties and the birth of new third parties, that's always in a parliamentary system. And the difference is that in a parliamentary system, the equivalent of the House and Senate, the legislature, they elect their leader, their head administrator. You can call it the head of state, you can call it the prime minister, you can call it president if you want to, but it's basically, you vote for Congress, and then they vote for who their chief executive is.
Right.
In that situation, you can have a third party get extra power because they hold the tie-breaking votes.
Nice.
And so because of that tie-breaking vote power of a small third party can wield great influence in politics, and so you have a lot of third parties trying to start. And sometimes they get traction, and then they tip the balance in favor of their pet issue. Now, which system is better, I don't know. Okay, there are arguments both ways. I think they're both pretty good compared to, like, dictatorship. Okay, so I think we can be happy with what we got. But because of our presidential election system, the fight for power demands essentially two parties fighting against each other, and each party is going to be some kind of coalition within itself as best it can be, and we're going to have the fights that we're going to have. So I don't see a third party happening. I do, however, see possibly a movement within the middle where it doesn't become big enough to become a party. We're not talking about 100 million moderates here. I could see 1 million moderates coming together to form a kind of a movement that tries to push this cap and prioritize idea, creating a fiscally conservative, socially progressive government. And both sides, as soon as they see a middle party getting momentum, they're going to start co-opting those ideas so that the middle party never forms. That's one reason I'm thinking about kind of starting this, myself actually, is starting this 1 million moderates kind of movement, because that could be the thing that forces both sides to step up.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I've even said over the years, I've looked at things and go, majority of the voting bloc is moderate. I mean, you go to either side on the extreme sides and you've got both of those are smaller numbers. And, and I've often wondered, well, why doesn't the moderate, middle come up with, like their own party? But what you're saying is more like a movement that would, push things maybe to where we're fiscally conservative and socially responsible. It makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, hey, we're about to wrap up the show. Jay, I did want to ask you a question, though. Since they did pass marijuana legislation in Alaska, are we going to see a lot more baked Alaskans?
Oh, boy. Okay, well, let me say this. It's like anything. When it first becomes legal, there's going to be a free-for-all. So people that are judging Colorado by what's going on in downtown Denver, right now, I think it's a little too soon. Yes, there's going to be a period of reformation where it becomes, or in this case, reformation. I'm not the only one. Okay. So basically, that there's going to be a period where there's going to be a free-for-all. If you starved yourself for a week and then went to an all-you-can-eat buffet, you're going to gorge yourself. If you went the next day, you're not going to eat as much. So it'll taper off until it becomes sort of the norm. But right now, it's a free-for-all, and yes, there will probably be some people experimenting.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up the show for today. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to The Political Fix with your host, Jay Amernick and Rick Radich. We hope you'll tune in next week again. You can go to politicalfixradio.com, listen to the shows anytime. And this is I don't know what I want to call myself. I always said in Marvelous Money as a producer and co-host, but it was fun to sit in for Heather today, guys, and I wish you well on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Val Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.